The headlights died back to low beam, and the truck rolled forward and stopped again. The window came down. The driver was a fat, red-faced man. He was clinging to the wheel like he would fall out of his chair if he didn't. He said,
"Where are you headed?"
His voice was slurred. Reacher said, "North into Colorado. I'm trying to get to a place called Hope."
"Never heard of it."
"Me neither, till a few days ago."
"How far away?"
"Maybe 4 hours."
"Is it on the way to Denver?"
"It would be a slight detour."
"Are you an honest man?"
Reacher said, "Usually."
"Are you a good driver?"
"Not really."
"Are you drunk?"
"Not even a little bit."
"Well, I am. A lot. So you drive to wherever it is you want to go. Keep me out of trouble. Let me sleep it off and then point me toward Denver, okay?"
"Deal." Hitchhiking usually carried with it the promise of random personal encounters and conversations made more intense by the certainty that their durations would necessarily be limited. Not this time. The florid guy heaved himself over into the passenger seat and collapsed its back against a worn mechanism and went straight to sleep without another word. He snored and bubbled far back in his throat, and he thrashed restlessly. According to the smell of his breath, he had been drinking bourbon all evening. A lot of bourbon. Probably with bourbon chasers. He was still going to be illegal when he woke up in 4 hours' time and pressed on to Denver. Not Reacher's problem. The Suburban was old and worn and grimy. Its total elapsed mileage was displayed in the window below the center of the speedometer in LED figures like a cheap watch. A lot of figures, starting with a 2. The motor wasn't in great shape. It still had power, but it had a lot of weight to haul, and it didn't want to go much faster than 60 miles an hour. There was a cell phone on the center console. It was switched off. Reacher glanced at his sleeping passenger and switched it on. It wouldn't spark up. No charge in the battery. There was a charger plugged into the cigarette lighter. Reacher steered with his knees and traced the free end of the wire and shoved it into a hole on the bottom of the phone. Tried to switch again. The phone came on with a tinkly little tune. The sleeping guy just snored on. The phone showed no service. The middle of nowhere. The road narrowed from 4 lanes to 2. Reacher drove on. 5 miles ahead, he could see a pair of red taillights. Small lights, set low, widely spaced. Moving north a little slower than the Suburban. The speed differential was maybe 5 miles an hour, which meant it took 60 whole minutes to close the gap. The lights were on a U-Haul truck. It was cruising at about 55. When Reacher came up behind it, it sped up to a steady 60. Reacher pulled out and tried to pass, but the Suburban wouldn't accelerate. It bogged down at about 62, which would have put Reacher on the wrong side of the road for a long, long time, maybe forever. So he eased off and tucked in behind the truck and battled the frustration of having to drive just a little slower than he wanted to. The cell phone was still showing no service. There was nothing to see behind, nothing to see to the sides. The world was dark and empty. 30 feet ahead, the U-Haul's back panel was lit up bright by the Suburban's headlights. It was like a rolling billboard, an advertisement. It had a picture of 3 trucks parked side by side at an angle, small, medium, and large. Each was shown in U-Haul's distinctive orange and white colors. Each had U-Haul painted on its front. Each promised an automatic transmission, a gentle ride, a low deck, air conditioning, and cloth seats. A price of $19.95 was advertised in large figures. Reacher eased the Suburban closer to check the fine print. The bargain price was for in-town use of a small truck for 1 day, mileage extra, subject to contract terms. Reacher eased off again and fell back. U-Haul. U-Haul. We don't. independence, self-reliance, initiative. In general, Reacher didn't care for the corruption of written language. You for you, EZ for easy, HI for high, LO for low. He had spent many years in school learning to read and spell, and he wanted to feel that there had been some point to it. But he couldn't get too worked up about U-Haul. What was the alternative? Self-drive trucks? Too clunky. Too generic. No kind of a catchy business name. He followed 30 feet behind the bright rolling billboard, and the triple U-Haul logos blurred together and filled his field of view. The letter U for Y-O-U. Then he thought, Y-O-U for the letter U. You did this to me. To assume makes an ass out of you and me. He checked the phone again. No signal. They were in the middle of the Comanche National grassland, like being way out at sea. The closest cell tower was probably in Lamar, which was about an hour ahead. The drunk guy slept noisily, and Reacher followed the wallowing U-Haul truck for 60 solid minutes. Lamar showed up ahead as a faint glow on the horizon, probably not more than a couple of streetlights, but in contrast to the black grassland all around, it felt like a destination. There was a small municipal airfield to the west, and there was cell coverage. Reacher glanced down and saw two bars showing on the phone's signal strength meter. He dialed Vaughn's home number from memory. No answer. He clicked off and dialed information, asked for the Hope PD, let the phone company connect him. He figured his sleeping passenger could spring for the convenience. He heard the ringtone, and then there was a click and more ringtone. Automatic call forwarding, he guessed. The Hope PD building wasn't manned at night. Vaughn had mentioned a day guy, but no night guy. Incoming calls would be rerouted out straight to the nighttime prowl car, to a cell provided by the department or to a personal cell. 10 nights out of 14 it would be Vaughn answering, but not tonight. She was off duty. It would be another officer out there chasing gum wrappers, maybe a deputy. A voice in his ear said, "Hope PD," Reacher said. "I need to talk to Officer Vaughn." The guy in the passenger seat stirred but didn't wake up. The voice in Reacher's ear said, "Officer Vaughn is off duty tonight." "I know, but I need her cell number." "I can't give that to you." "Then call it yourself and ask her to call me back on this number." "I might wake her."
"You won't."
Silence. Reacher said, "This is important. And be quick, I'll be heading out of range in a minute." He clicked off. The town of Lamar loomed up ahead. Low, dark buildings, a tall water tower, a lit-up gas station. The U-Haul pulled off for fuel. Reacher checked the Suburban's gauge. Half full. A big tank. But a thirsty motor and many miles to go. He followed the U-Haul to the pumps, unplugged the phone. It showed decent battery and marginal reception. He put it in his shirt pocket. The pumps were operational, but the pay booth was closed up and dark. The guy from the U-Haul poked a credit card into a slot on the pump and pulled it out again. Reacher used his ATM card and did the same thing. The pump started up, and Reacher selected regular unleaded and watched in horror as the numbers flicked around. Gas was expensive. That was for damn sure, more than $3 for a gallon. The last time he had filled the car, the price had been $1. He nodded to the U-Haul guy, who nodded back. The U-Haul guy was a youngish, well-built man with long hair. He was wearing a tight, black, short-sleeve shirt with a clerical collar. Some kind of a minister of religion. Probably played the guitar. The phone rang in Reacher's pocket. He left the nozzle wedged in the filler neck and turned away and answered. The Hope cop said, "Vaughn didn't pick up her cell." Reacher said, "Try your radio. She's out in the watch commander's car."
"Where?"
"I'm not sure."
"Why is she out in the watch commander's car?"
"Long story." You're the guy she's been hanging with? Just call her. She's married, you know.
I know. Now call her.
The guy stayed on the line, and Reacher heard him get on the radio. A call sign, a code, a request for an immediate response, all repeated once, and then again. Then the sound of dead air. Buzzing, crackling, the heterodyne whine of nighttime interference from high in the ionosphere. Plenty of random noise, but nothing else. No reply from Vaughn. Chapter 61. Reacher got out of the gas station ahead of the minister in the U-Haul and headed north as fast as the old Suburban would go. The drunk guy slept on next to him. He was leaking alcohol through his pores. Reacher cracked a window. The night air kept him awake and sober, and the whistle masked the snoring. Cell coverage died 8 miles north of Lamar. Reacher guessed it wouldn't come back until they got close to the I-70 corridor, which was 2 hours ahead. It was 4:30 in the morning. ETA in Hope, around dawn. A 5-hour delay, which was an inconvenience, but maybe not a disaster. Then the Suburban's engine blew. Reacher was no kind of an automotive expert. He didn't see it coming. He saw the temperature needle nudge upward a tick and thought nothing of it. Just stress and strain, he figured, because of the long, fast cruise. But the needle didn't stop moving. It went all the way up into the red zone and didn't stop until it was hard against the peg. The motor lost power, and a hot, wet smell came in through the vents. Then there was a muffled thump under the hood, and strings of tan emulsion blew out of the ventilation slots in front of the windshield and spattered all over the glass. The motor died altogether, and the Suburban slowed hard. Reacher steered to the shoulder and coasted to a stop. Not good, he thought. The drunk guy slept on. Reacher got out in the darkness and headed around to the front of the hood. He used the flats of his hands to bounce some glow from the headlight beams back onto the car. He saw steam and sticky tan sludge leaking from every crevice, thick and foamy. A mixture of engine oil and cooling water. Blown head gaskets. Total breakdown. Repairable, but not without hundreds of dollars and a week in the shop. Not good. Half a mile south, he could see the U-Haul's lights coming his way. He stepped around to the passenger door and leaned in over the sleeping guy and found a pen and an old service invoice in the glove compartment. He turned the invoice over and wrote, "You need to buy a new car. I borrowed your cell phone. We'll mail it back." He signed the note, "Your hitchhiker." He took the Suburban's registration for the guy's address and folded it into his pocket. Then he ran 50 feet south and stepped into the traffic lane and held his arms high and waited to flag the U-Haul down. It picked him up in its headlights about 50 yards out. Reacher waved his arms above his head, the universal distress signal. The U-Haul's headlights flicked to bright. The truck slowed, like Reacher knew it would. A lonely road and a disabled vehicle and a stranded driver, both of them at least fleetingly familiar to the Good Samaritan behind the wheel. The U-Haul came to rest a yard in front of Reacher, halfway on the shoulder. The window came down, and the guy in the dog collar stuck his head out. "Need help?" he said. Then he smiled, wide and wholesome. "Dumb question, I guess." "I need a ride," Reacher said. "The engine blew." "Want me to take a look?" Reacher said, "No." He didn't want the minister to see the drunk guy. From a distance, he was out of sight on the reclined seat, below the window line. Close up, he was big and obvious. Abandoning a broken-down truck in the middle of nowhere was one thing. Abandoning a comatose passenger was another.
"No point. Believe me, I'll have to send a tow truck, or set fire to the damn thing." "I'm headed north to Yuma. You're welcome to join me for all or part of the way."
Reacher nodded, called up the map in his head. The Yuma Road crossed the Hope Road about 2 hours ahead, the same road he had come in on originally, with the old guy in the green Grand Marquis. He would need to find a third ride for the final western leg. His ETA was now about 10 in the morning, with luck. He said, "Thanks. I'll jump out about halfway to Yuma." The guy in the dog collar smiled his wholesome smile again and said, "Hop in." The U-Haul was a full-sized pickup frame overwhelmed by a box body a little longer and wider and a lot taller than a pickup's load bed. It sagged and wallowed, and the extra weight and aerodynamic resistance made it slow. It struggled up close to 60 miles an hour and stayed there. Wouldn't go any faster. Inside, it smelled of warm exhaust fumes and hot oil and plastic. But the seat was cloth, as advertised, and reasonably comfortable. Reacher had to fight to stay awake. He wanted to be good company. He didn't want to replicate the drunk guy's manners. He asked, "What are you hauling?" The guy in the collar said, "Used furniture. Donations. We run a mission in Yuma." "We? Our church." "What kind of a mission?" "We help the homeless and the needy." "What kind of a church?" "We're Anglicans. Plain vanilla, middle of the road." "Do you, play the guitar?" The guy smiled again. "We try to be inclusive. Where I'm going, there's an end times church." The minister shook his head. "An end times congregation, maybe. It's not a recognized denomination." "What do you know about them?" "Have you read the book of Revelation?" Reacher said, "I've heard of it." The minister said, "Its correct title is The Revelation of St. John the Divine. Most of the original is lost, of course. It was written either in ancient Hebrew or Aramaic, and copied by hand many times, and then translated into Koine Greek, and copied by hand many times, and then translated into Latin, and copied by hand many times, and then translated into Elizabethan English, and printed, with opportunities for error and confusion at every single stage. Now, it reads like a bad acid trip. I suspect it always did. Possibly all the translations and all the copying actually improved it." "What does it say?" "Your guess is as good as mine." "Are you serious?" "Some of our homeless people make more sense." "What do people think it says?" "Broadly, the righteous ascend to heaven, the unholy are left on earth, and are visited by various colorful plagues and disasters. Christ returns to battle the Antichrist in an Armageddon scenario, and no one winds up very happy."
"Is that the same as the rapture?"
"The rapture is the ascending part. The plagues and the fighting are separate. They come afterward."
"When is all this supposed to happen?"
"It's perpetually imminent, apparently."
Reacher thought back to Thurman's smug little speech in the metal plant. "There are signs," he had said, "and the possibility of precipitating events." Reacher asked, "What would be the trigger?"
"Oh, I'm not sure there's a trigger, as such. Presumably a large element of divine will would be involved."
"One would certainly hope so."
"Pre-echoes, then? Ways to know it's coming?"
The minister shrugged at the wheel.
"End times people read the Bible like other people listen to Beatles records backward. There's something about a red calf being born in the Holy Land. End times enthusiasts are real keen on that part. They comb through ranches, looking for cattle a little more auburn than usual. They ship pears to Israel, hoping they'll breed a perfect redhead. They want to get things started. That's another key characteristic. They can't wait. Because they're all
awfully sure they'll be among the righteous, which makes them self-righteous, actually. Most people accept that who gets saved is God's decision, not man's. It's a form of snobbery, really. They think they're better than the rest of us. That's it? Red calves? Most enthusiasts believe that a major war in the Middle East is absolutely necessary, which is why they've been so unhappy about Iraq. Apparently, what's happening there isn't bad enough for them.
You sound skeptical. The guy smiled again.
Of course I'm skeptical. I'm an Anglican.
There was no more conversation after that, either theological or secular. Reacher was too tired, and the guy behind the wheel was too deep into night-driving survival mode, where nothing existed except the part of the road ahead that his headlights showed him. His eyes were wedged open, and he was sitting forward, as if he knew that to relax would be fatal. Reacher stayed awake, too. He knew the Hope Road wouldn't be signposted, and it wasn't exactly a major highway. The guy behind the wheel wouldn't spot it on his own. It arrived exactly 2 hours into the trip, a lumpy two-lane crossing their path at an exact right angle. It had stop signs, and the main north-south drag didn't. By the time Reacher called it and the minister reacted and the U-Haul's overmatched brakes did their job, they were 200 yards past it. Reacher got out and waved the truck away and waited until its lights and its noise were gone. Then he walked back through the dark, empty vastness. Pre-dawn was happening way to the east, over Kansas or Missouri. Colorado was still pitch black. There was no cell phone signal. No traffic, either. Reacher took up station on the west side of the junction, standing on the shoulder close to the traffic lane. East-west drivers would have to pause at the stop sign opposite, and they would get a good look at him 20 yards ahead. But there were no east-west drivers. Not for the first 10 minutes, then the first 15, then the first 20. A lone car came north, trailing the U-Haul by 20 miles, but it didn't turn off. It just blasted onward. An SUV came south and slowed, ready to turn, but it turned east, away from Hope. Its lights grew small and faint, and then they disappeared. It was cold. There was a wind coming out of the east, and it was moving rain clouds into the sky. Reacher turned his collar up and crossed his arms over his chest and trapped his hands under his biceps for warmth. Cloudy, diffused streaks of pink and purple lit up the far horizon. A new day, empty, innocent, as yet unsullied. Maybe a good day. Maybe a bad day. Maybe the last day. The end is near, Thurman's church had promised. Maybe a meteorite the size of a moon was hurtling closer. Maybe governments had suppressed the news. Maybe rebels were right then, forcing the locks on an old Ukrainian silo. Maybe in a research lab somewhere a flask had cracked or a glove had torn or a mask had leaked. Or maybe not. Reacher stamped his feet and ducked his face into his shoulder. His nose was cold. When he looked up again, he saw headlights in the east. Bright, widely spaced, far enough away that they seemed to be static. A large vehicle. A truck. Possibly a semi-trailer. Coming straight toward him with the new dawn behind it. Four possibilities. One, it would arrive at the junction and turn right and head north. Two, it would arrive at the junction and turn left and head south. Three, it would pause at the stop sign and then continue west without picking him up. Four, it would pause and cross the main drag and then pause again to let him climb aboard. Chances of a happy ending? 25%. Or less, if it was a corporate vehicle with a no-passenger policy because of insurance hassles. Reacher waited. When the truck was a quarter mile away, he saw that it was a big, rigid panel van painted white. When it was 300 yards away, he saw that it had a refrigerator unit mounted on top. Fresh food delivery, which would have reduced the odds of a happy outcome if it hadn't been for the stop signs. Food drivers usually didn't like to stop. They had schedules to keep, and stopping a big truck and then getting it back up to speed could rob a guy of measurable minutes. But the stop signs meant he had to slow anyway. Reacher waited. He heard the guy lift off 200 yards short of the junction, heard the hiss of brakes. He raised his hand high, thumb extended. "I need a ride." Then he raised both arms and waved. The distress semaphore. "I really need a ride." The truck stopped at the line on the east side of the junction. Neither one of its direction indicators was flashing. A good sign. There was no traffic north or south, so it moved on again immediately. Diesel roaring, gears grinding, heading west across the main drag, straight toward Reacher. It accelerated. The driver looked down. The truck kept on moving. Then it slowed again. The air brakes hissed loud, and the springs squealed, and the truck came to a stop with the cab 40 feet west of the junction and the rear fender a yard out of the north-south traffic lane. Reacher turned and jogged back and climbed up on the step. The window came down, and the driver peered out from 7 feet south. He was a short, wiry man, incongruously small in the huge cab. He said, "It's gone, Arain." Reacher said, "That's the least of my problems. My car broke down." The guy at the wheel said, "My first stop is Hope." Reacher said, "You're the supermarket guy from Topeka." "I left there at 4 this morning. You want to ride along?" "Hope is where I'm headed. So quit stalling and climb aboard." Dawn chased the truck all the way west and overtook it inside 30 minutes. The world lit up cloudy and pale gold, and the supermarket guy killed his headlights and sat back and relaxed. He drove the same way Thurman had flown his plane, with small, efficient movements and his hands held low. Reacher asked him if he often carried passengers, and he said that about one morning in 5 he found someone looking for a ride. Reacher said he had met a couple of women who had ridden with him. "Tourists," the guy said. "More than that," Reacher said. "You think?" "I know." "How much?" "All of it."
"How?"
"I figured it out." The guy nodded at the wheel. "Wives and girlfriends, looking to be close by while their husbands and boyfriends pass through the state." "Understandable," Reacher said. "It's a tense time for them." "So you know what their husbands and boyfriends are?" "Yes, I do."
"And?"
"And nothing. Not my business."
"You're not going to tell anyone?"
"There's a cop called Vaughn. I'm going to have to tell her. She has a right to know. She's involved 2 ways around."
"Yeah, I know her. She's not going to be happy."
Reacher said, "Maybe she will be. Maybe she won't be."
"I'm not involved," the guy said. "I'm just a fellow traveler."
"You are involved," Reacher said. "We're all involved." Then he checked his borrowed cell phone again. No signal. There was nothing on the radio either. The supermarket guy hit a button that scanned the whole AM spectrum from end to end, and he came up with nothing, just static. A giant continent, mostly empty. The truck hammered on, bouncing and swaying on the rough surface. Reacher asked, "Where does despair get its food?"
"I don't know, and I don't care."
"Ever been there?"
"Once, just to take a look. And once was enough."
"Why do people stay there?"
"I don't know. Inertia, maybe."
"Are there jobs elsewhere?"
"Plenty. They could head west to halfway, lots of jobs there.
Or Denver?
That place is expanding for sure. Hell, they could come east to Topeka. We're growing like crazy. Nice houses, great schools, good wages, right there for the taking. This is the land of opportunity.
Reacher nodded and checked his cell phone again. No signal. They made it to Hope just before 10 in the morning. The place looked calm and quiet and unchanged. Clouds were massing overhead, and it was cold. Reacher got out on First Street and stood for a moment. His cell phone showed good signal, but he didn't dial. He walked down to Fifth and turned east. From 50 yards away, he saw that there was nothing parked on the curb outside Vaughn's house. No cruiser, no black Crown Vic, nothing at all. He walked on to get an angle and check the driveway. The old blue Chevy pickup was in the driveway. It was parked nose in, tight to the garage door. It had glass in its windows again. The glass was still labeled with paper barcodes, and it was crisp and clear, except where it was smeared in places with wax and handprints. It looked very new against the faded old paint. The ladder and the wrecking bar and the flashlight were in the load bed. Reacher walked up the stepping stone path to the door and rang the bell. He heard it sound inside the house. The neighborhood was still and silent. He stood on the step for 30 long seconds, and then the door opened. Vaughn looked out at him and said,
"Hello."
Chapter 62. Vaughn was dressed in the same black clothes she had worn the night before. She looked still and calm and composed and a little distant, a little preoccupied. Reacher said,
"I was worried about you."
Vaughn said,
"Were you?"
"I tried to call you twice, here and in the car. Where were you?"
"Here and there." "You better come in."
The kitchen looked just the same as before. Neat, clean, decorated, 3 chairs at the table. There was a glass of water on the counter and coffee in the machine. Reacher said,
"I'm sorry I didn't get right back."
"Don't apologize to me."
"What's wrong?"
"You want coffee?"
"After you tell me what's wrong."
"Nothing is wrong."
"Like hell."
"Okay. We shouldn't have done what we did the night before last."
"Which part?"
"You know which part. You took advantage. I started to feel bad about it, so when you didn't come back with the plane, I switched off my phone and my radio and drove out to Colorado Springs and told David all about it."
"In the middle of the night?"
Vaughn shrugged.
"They let me in. They were very nice about it, actually. They treated me very well."
"And what did David say?"
"That's cruel."
Reacher shook his head.
"It isn't cruel. It's a simple question."
"What's your point?"
"That David no longer exists. Not as you knew him. Not in any meaningful sense. And that you've got a choice to make. And it's not a new choice. There have been mass casualties from the Civil War onward. There have been tens of thousands of men in David's position over more than a century, and therefore there have been tens of thousands of women in your position."
"And?"
"They all made a choice."
"David still exists."
"In your memory, not in the world."
"He's not dead."
"He's not alive, either." Vaughn said nothing, just turned away and took a fine china mug from a cupboard and filled it with coffee from the machine. She handed the mug to Reacher and asked,
"What was in Thurman's little box?"
"You saw the box?"
"I was over the wall 10 seconds after you. Did you really think I was going to wait in the car?"
"I didn't see you."
"That was the plan. But I saw you. I saw the whole thing. Fly with me tonight?" "He ditched you somewhere, didn't he?"
Reacher nodded.
"Fort Shaw, Oklahoma, an army base."
"You fell for it."
"I sure did."
You're not as smart as you think.
I never claimed to be smart.
What was in the box?
A plastic jar.
What was in the jar?
Soot, Reacher said. People, after a fire. They scrape it off the metal. Vaughn sat down at her table.
That's terrible.
Worse than terrible, Reacher said. Complicated.
How?
Reacher sat down opposite her. You can breathe easy. There are no wrecked Humvees at the plant. They go someplace else.
How do you know?
Because Humvees don't burn like that. Mostly they bust open and people spill out. Vaughn nodded.
David wasn't burned.
Reacher said, only tanks burn like that. No way out of a burning tank. Soot is all that's left.
I see.
Reacher said nothing.
But how is that complicated?
It's the first in a series of conclusions. Like a logical chain reaction. We're using main battle tanks over there, which isn't a huge surprise, I guess. But we're losing some, which is a huge surprise. We always expected to lose a few, to the Soviets, but we sure as hell didn't expect to lose any to a bunch of ragtag terrorists with improvised explosive devices. In less than 4 years, they've figured out how to make shaped charges good enough to take out main battle tanks belonging to the U.S. Army. That doesn't help our PR very much. I'm real glad the Cold War's over. The Red Army would be helpless with laughter. No wonder the Pentagon ships the wrecks in sealed containers to a secret location. Vaughn got up and walked over to her counter and picked up her glass of water. She emptied it in the sink and refilled it from a bottle in her refrigerator, took a sip.
I got a call this morning from the state lab. My tap water sample was very close to 5 parts per billion TCE. Borderline acceptable, but it's going to get a lot worse if Thurman keeps on using as much of the stuff as he uses now.
He might stop, Reacher said.
Why would he?
That's the final conclusion in the chain. We're not there yet, and it's only tentative.
So what was the second conclusion?
What does Thurman do with the wrecked tanks?
He recycles the steel.
Why would the Pentagon deploy MPs to guard recycled steel?
I don't know.
The Pentagon wouldn't. Nobody cares about steel. The MPs are there to guard something else.
Like what?
Only one possibility. A main battle tank's front and side armor includes a thick layer of depleted uranium. It's a byproduct from enriching natural uranium for nuclear reactors. It's an incredibly strong and dense metal, absolutely ideal for armor plate. So the second conclusion is that Thurman is a uranium specialist, and that's what the MPs are there for. Because depleted uranium is toxic and somewhat radioactive, it's the kind of thing you want to keep track of.
How toxic? How radioactive?
Tank crews don't get sick from sitting behind it, but after a blast or an explosion, if it turns to dust or fragments or vapor, you can get very sick from breathing it, or by being hit by shrapnel made of it. That's why they bring the wrecks back to the States, and that's what the MPs are worried about, even here. Terrorists could steal it and break it up into small, jagged pieces and pack them into an explosive device. It would make a perfect dirty bomb.
It's heavy.
Incredibly.
They'd need a truck to steal it, like you said.
A big truck.
Reacher sipped his coffee, and Vaughn sipped her water and said, they're cutting it up at the plant with hammers and torches. That must make dust and fragments and vapor. No wonder everyone looks sick.
Reacher nodded. The deputy died from it. All those symptoms? Hair loss, nausea and vomiting, diarrhea, blisters, sores, dehydration, organ failure. That wasn't old age or TCE. It was radiation poisoning.
Are you sure?
Reacher nodded again. Very sure, because he told me so. From his deathbed, he said, the... And then he stopped, and then he started again. He said, you did this to me. I thought it was a new sentence. I thought he was accusing me, but it was really all the same sentence. He was pausing for breath, that's all. He was saying, the you did this to me. Like some kind of a plea, or an explanation, or maybe a warning. He was using the chemical symbol for uranium. Metalworker's slang, I guess. He was saying, the uranium did this to me. Vaughn said,
the air at the plant must be thick with it. And we were right there.
Reacher said, remember the way the wall glowed on the infrared camera? It wasn't hot. It was radioactive. Chapter 63. Vaughn sipped her bottled water and stared into space, adjusting to a new situation that was in some ways better than she had imagined, and in some ways worse. She asked,
why do you say there are no Humvees there?
Reacher said, because the Pentagon specializes. Like I told you, it always has and it always will. The plant in despair is about uranium recycling, that's all. Humvees go somewhere else, somewhere cheaper, because they're easy. They're just cars.
They send cars to despair, too. We saw them in the container from Iraq or Iran.
Reacher nodded, exactly, which is the third conclusion. They sent those cars to despair for a reason.
Which was what?
Only one logical possibility. Depleted uranium isn't just for armor. They make artillery shells and tank shells out of it, too, because it's incredibly hard and dense.
So?
So, the third conclusion is that those cars were hit with ammunition made from depleted uranium. They're tainted, so they have to be processed appropriately. And they have to be hidden away, because we're using tanks and DU shells against thin-skinned civilian vehicles. That's overkill. That's very bad PR. Thurman said there are some things any government feels it politic to conceal. And he was right.
What the hell is happening over there?
Reacher said, your guess is as good as mine. Vaughn raised her glass halfway and stopped. She looked at it like she was having second thoughts about ingesting anything and put it back down on the table. She said,
tell me what you know about dirty bombs.
They're the same as clean bombs, Reacher said, except they're dirty. A bomb detonates and creates a massive spherical pressure wave that knocks things over and pulps anything soft, like people, and small fragments of the casing are flung outward on the wave like bullets, which does further damage. That effect can be enhanced by packing extra shrapnel inside the casing around the explosive charge, like nails or ball bearings. A dirty bomb uses contaminated metal for the extra shrapnel, usually radioactive waste.
How bad is the result?
That's debatable. With depleted uranium, the powdered oxides after a high-temperature explosion are certainly bad news. There are fertility issues, miscarriages, and birth defects. Most people think the radiation itself isn't really a huge problem, except that, like I said, it's debatable. Nobody really knows for sure, which is the exact problem. Because you can bet your ass
everyone will err on the side of caution, which multiplies the effect psychologically. It's classic asymmetric warfare. If a dirty bomb goes off in a city, the city will be abandoned, whether it needs to be or not.
How big would the bomb need to be?
The bigger the better.
How much uranium would they need to steal?
The more the merrier.
I think they're already stealing it. That truck we photographed?
The front of the load compartment was glowing just like the wall.
Reacher shook his head. No, that was something else entirely.
Chapter 64. Reacher said, "Walk to town with me, to the motel."
Vaughn said,
"I don't know if I want to be seen with you, especially at the motel. People are talking."
"But not in a bad way."
"I'm not so sure."
"Whatever. I'll be gone tomorrow. So let them talk for one more day."
"Tomorrow?"
"Maybe earlier. I might need to stick around to make a phone call. Apart from that, I'm done here."
"Who do you need to call?"
"Just a number. I don't think anyone will answer."
"What about all this other stuff going on?"
"So far all we've got is the Pentagon washing its dirty linen in private. That's not a crime."
"What's at the motel?"
"I'm guessing we'll find room 4 is empty."
They walked together through the damp late morning air, 2 blocks north from 5th Street to 3rd, and then 3 blocks west to the motel. They bypassed the office and headed on down the row. Room 4's door was standing open. There was a maid's cart parked outside. The bed was stripped and the bathroom towels were dumped in a pile on the floor. The closets were empty. The maid had a vacuum cleaner going. Vaughn said,
"Mrs. Rogers is gone."
Reacher nodded. "Now let's find out when and how." They backtracked to the office. The clerk was on her stool behind the counter. Room 4's key was back on its hook. Now only 2 keys were missing. Reacher's own for room 12 and Maria's for room 8. The clerk slid off her stool and stood with her hands spread on the counter, attentive and helpful. Reacher glanced at the phone beside her and asked, "Did Mrs. Rogers get a call?" The clerk nodded.
6 o'clock last night."
"Good news?"
"She seemed very happy."
"What then?"
"She checked out."
"And went where?"
"She called a cab to take her to Burlington."
"What's in Burlington?"
"Mostly the airport bus to Denver."
Reacher nodded.
"Thanks for your help.
Is anything wrong?"
"That depends on your point of view."
Reacher was hungry, and he needed more coffee, so he led Vaughn another block north and another block west to the diner. The place was practically empty. Too late for breakfast, too early for lunch. Reacher stood for a second and then slid into the boot that Lucy Anderson had used the night he had met her. Vaughn sat across from him where Lucy had sat. The waitress delivered ice water and silverware. They ordered coffee, and then Vaughn asked,
"What exactly is going on?"
"All those young guys," Reacher said.
"What do they have in common?"
"I don't know."
"They were young, and they were guys."
"And?"
"They were from California."
"So?"
"And the only white one we saw had a hell of a tan."
"So?"
"I sat right here with Lucy Anderson. She was cautious and a little wary, but basically we were getting along. She asked to see my wallet, to check I wasn't an investigator. Then later, I said I had been a cop, and she panicked. I put 2 and 2 together and figured her husband was a fugitive. The more she thought about it, the more worried she got. She was very hostile the next day."
"Figures?
Then I caught a glimpse of her husband in despair and went back to check the rooming house where he was staying. It was empty, but it was very clean.
Is that important?
Crucial. Then I saw Lucy again after her husband had moved on. She said they have lawyers. She talked about people in her position. She sounded like she was part of something organized. I said I could follow her to her husband, and she said it wouldn't do me any good. The waitress came over with the coffee. 2 mugs, 2 spoons, a bun flask full of a brand new brew. She poured and walked away, and Reacher sniffed the steam and took a sip. "But I was misremembering all along," he said. "I didn't tell Lucy Anderson that I had been a cop. I told her I had been a military cop. That's why she panicked. And that's why the rooming house was so clean. It was like a barracks ready for inspection. Old habits die hard. The people passing through it were all soldiers. Lucy thought I was tracking them." Vaughn said,
"Deserters."
Reacher nodded. "That's why the Anderson guy had such a great tan. He had been in Iraq, but he didn't want to go back."
"Where is he now?"
"Canada," Reacher said. "That's why Lucy wasn't worried about me following her. It wouldn't do me any good. No jurisdiction. It's a sovereign nation, and they're offering asylum up there."
"The truck. It was from Ontario."
Reacher nodded. "Like a taxi service. The glow on the camera wasn't stolen uranium. It was Mrs. Rogers' husband in a hidden compartment. Body heat, like the driver. The shade of green was the same." Chapter 65. Vaughn sat still and quiet for a long time. The waitress came back and refilled Reacher's mug twice. Vaughn didn't touch hers. She asked,
"What was the California connection?"
Reacher said, "Some kind of an anti-war activist group out there must be running an escape line. Maybe local service families are involved. They figured out a system. They sent guys up here with legitimate metal deliveries, and then their Canadian friends took them north over the border. There was a couple at the Despair Hotel 7 months ago from California. A buck gets 10, they were the organizers, recruiting sympathizers. And the sympathizers policed the whole thing. They busted your truck's windows. They thought I was getting too nosy, and they were trying to move me on." Vaughn pushed her mug out of the way and moved the salt and the pepper and the sugar in front of her. She put them in a neat line. She straightened her index finger and jabbed at the pepper shaker, moved it out of place, jabbed at it again and knocked it over.
"A small subgroup," she said. "The few left-hand people working behind Thurman's back, helping deserters."
Reacher said nothing.
Vaughn asked, "Do you know who they are?"
"No idea."
"I want to find out."
"Why?"
"Because I want to have them arrested. I want to call the FBI with a list of names."
"Okay.
Well, don't you want to?"
"No, I don't."
Vaughn was too civilized and too small town to have the fight in the diner. She just threw money on the table and stalked out. Reacher followed her like he knew he was supposed to. She headed toward the quieter area on the edge of town, or toward the motel again, or toward the police station. Reacher wasn't sure which. Either she wanted solitude, or to demand phone records from the motel clerk, or to be in front of her computer. She was walking fast, in a fury, but Reacher caught her easily. He fell in beside her and matched her pace for pace, and waited for her to speak. She said,
"You knew about this yesterday."
"Since the day before."
"How?"
The same way I figured the patients in David's hospital were military. They were all young men.
You waited until that truck was over the border before you told me.
Yes, I did.
Why?
I didn't want you to have it stopped.
Why not?
I wanted Rogers to get away. Vaughn stopped walking.
For God's sake! You were a military cop.
Reacher nodded. 13 years.
You hunted guys like Rogers.
Yes, I did.
And now you've gone over to the dark side?
Reacher said nothing. Vaughn said,
Did you know Rogers?
Never heard of him. But I knew 10,000 just like him. Vaughn started walking again. Reacher kept pace. She stopped 50 yards short of the motel. Outside the police station. The brick facade looked cold in the gray light. The neat aluminum letters looked colder.
They had a duty, Vaughn said. You had a duty. David did his duty. They should do theirs, and you should do yours.
Reacher said nothing.
Soldiers should go where they're told, she said. They should follow orders. They don't get to choose. And you swore an oath. You should obey it. They're traitors to their country. They're cowards, and you are too. I can't believe I slept with you. You're nothing. You're disgusting. You make my skin crawl.
Duty is a house of cards.
What the hell does that mean?
I went where they told me. I followed orders. I did everything they asked, and I watched 10,000 guys do the same. And we were happy to, deep down. I mean, we bitched and pissed and moaned like soldiers always do, but we bought the deal. Because duty is a transaction, Vaughn. It's a two-way street. We owe them, they owe us. And what they owe us is a solemn promise to risk our lives and limbs if, and only if, there's a damn good reason. Most of the time they're wrong anyway, but we like to feel some kind of good faith somewhere. At least a little bit. And that's all gone now. Now, it's all about political vanity and electioneering. That's all. And guys know that. You can try, but you can't bullshit a soldier. They blew it, not us. They pulled out the big card at the bottom of the house and the whole thing fell down. And guys like Anderson and Rogers are over there watching their friends getting killed and maimed, and they're thinking, why? Why should we do this shit?
And you think going AWOL is the answer?
I think the answer is for civilians to get off their fat asses and vote the bums out. They should exercise control. That's their duty. That's the next biggest card at the bottom of the house, but that's gone too, so don't talk to me about AWOL. Why should the grunts on the ground be the only ones who don't go AWOL? What kind of a two-way street is that?
You served 13 years, and you support deserters?
I understand their decision precisely because I served those 13 years. I had the good times. I wish they could have had them, too. I loved the Army, and I hate what happened to it. I feel the same as I would if I had a sister and she married a creep. Should she keep her marriage vows? To a point? Sure, but no further.
If you were in now, would you have deserted?
Reacher shook his head. I don't think I would have been brave enough.
It takes courage?
For most guys, more than you would think.
People don't want to hear that their loved ones died for no good reason.
I know. But that doesn't change the truth.
I hate you.
No, you don't. You hate the politicians and the commanders and the voters and the Pentagon.
Then he said, and you hate that David didn't go AWOL after his first tour.
Vaughn turned and faced the street, held still, closed her eyes.